Let's do that. Here you go. You got the sources also now. It's a chat box of this meeting. And it's wonderful. See, people are joining. John, good to see you. I see Arya is here. Wonderful, Arya. Boker Tov. Thank you for joining. Amazing. People are joining from everywhere, which is beautiful. We take another minute for people to join before we start, and then we'll roll. In the meanwhile, I hope everyone had a wonderful Shabbos, wherever you are in the world right now on the Zoom. And especially if you're in the Toronto area, in the GTA, or somewhere where the eclipse will be, then I'm sure you're all excited for what we're about to, I hope, see tomorrow. Depends on the weather. We're not sure exactly how cloudy the skies will be tomorrow, but for sure we're excited. I can tell you before we start that I've been working in the past week with some other teachers in the I'm teaching in the girls' high school and the boys' high school and the Akiva school, Toronto. So we're discussing back and forward about what sources can we actually bring to the students to learn together. We didn't want to lock the students up in the classes. Obviously, like I've heard other schools are doing, or canceling school on the other hand, on one hand, or just locking the student in this classroom and shading the windows so they're not going to see anything. We wanted to do something in between. We wanted to experience this once in a lifetime experience, while also maybe maintaining kind of a learning a routine. So we came up with a wonderful course sheet on the eclipse. And that's, I want to say that the shiur we're about to have is really the fruits of this wonderful discussion that we had among the different rabbis and teachers in the school. And some of those sources we will be learning together with our students tomorrow at the eclipse. I know that our plan is to take, I'm going to be at the girls' school at the time. We're going to take the girls out to Urbales. The school is right next to Urbales. We're going to take them out to learn together in Chavrutot, and then watching the eclipse. The school purchased, those special glasses for everyone to watch it. So I'm very excited, and I know the students are excited as well. All right, so let's start. Wonderful to see everyone. Boker Tov. It's good to see some faces that I usually see afternoon or evening. I see them in Sunday morning, so that's wonderful. And welcome to a special class, Solar Eclipse in Jewish Sources. You'll be shocked. How many sources are there on a solar eclipse? In from the Torah to Mishnah to Talmud to rabbinic sources, that there's just so many sources that I could bring on the sheet. I had a really hard time to decide which sources to put on and which not to. And eventually I ended up with a small source sheet of 17 sources. But this is out of maybe 40 or 50 that I had to choose to put on the source sheet, because solar eclipse, as rare as it might be, is something that I want to say really intrigued or like engaged our rabbis and our sages throughout generations to try and figure out what is the proper Jewish approach, response, explanation to such a phenomenon. And despite it being very rare, I know that the next one in Toronto area would be in about 120 years. So, and the next one in Yerushalayim would be in like 200 years, something like that. Despite it being very rare, the rabbi throughout the generations really looked into this as something that is very significant and has a spiritual meaning behind it. Not necessarily positive, by the way, which we will see in a moment in the sources. Not necessarily positive, but it's interesting to explore that. So, what I want to do today, I want to divide this class into three different parts. The first part, we'll discuss the spiritual meaning of an eclipse from different sources. What's the spiritual meaning of an eclipse? What does it say to us as people who watch an eclipse, who are in the middle of, we're on a geographical area where we can actually experience an eclipse? That will be the first part. Second part would be a question that I'm not sure you even would consider that as a question. Is one allowed to publicize an eclipse? You'll see why this is even a question, publicizing an eclipse or telling other people, come and watch with me the eclipse. You'll see that it's not taken for granted that this is actually allowed. And we'll conclude with an interesting question, a very practical one. Do we say a blessing, a bracha, over an eclipse? There's a question like that. Do we say a blessing over an eclipse? All right, we'll finish with this question. That'll be towards the end of the class, but I want to start with the spiritual meaning of an eclipse. So I want to thank again everyone who's joining. I'll once again share the source sheet in the chat box. You all have the sources. I'm not going to share the screen. You can open it and open it in a new tab. And we're ready to go. If you have any questions, please stop me. Please write it down in the chat box, whatever you want. I want it to be an interactive lecture. So I want to start with a very obvious source. Source number one, when we're told about the creation of the sun and the moon on the fourth day, right? It was on the fourth day of the 7 days of creation. I brought in source number one. The Torah tells us, right at the beginning of the Torah, tells us that God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to separate day from night. They shall serve as signs for the set times, the days and the years. And they shall serve as lights in the expanse of the sky to shine upon the earth. So first of all, we're told that there's two reasons, really, for the creation of the sun and the moon. All right, two reasons for that. Reason number one is to distinguish between day and night. All right, we, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God wanted that mankind will be able to tell whether it's daytime or nighttime. And therefore, it created the sun and the moon to separate between the day and the night. That's a reason number one. The second reason, we're familiar with that the Hebrew calendar is based on the moon, right? We know that, for example, Rosh Chodesh, which will be on Tuesday, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which will be on Tuesday, is based on the moon, right? We want to see when exactly the moon is, starting to be seen at the skies. And through the entire circle of the moon, from being a little bit until becoming a full moon, and again, shrinking a little bit, that's the entire Jewish month. So we use the moon to actually know what day it is in the month and what month it is, when does the month start, and so on. But we also use the sun, right? When do we use the sun? This year, for example, we are in a leap year. So a Jewish leap year is based on the fact that we need Pesach, Passover, to be celebrated at the spring. All right, and because of the way that the Jewish calendar works, because we're based on the moon, sum up once in 3-4 years, we need to add one more month at the beginning of Adar. We add the first Adar, Adar Rishon, Adar Aleph, before Adar Sheni. We add one more month. We have 13 months in this year because we want to push Passover, Pesach, to be towards the spring. Now, the spring, the seasons are based on the sun, not based on the moon. So we do have, I want to say, no, we're not only based on the moon, but we're also based on the sun. So there are mainly two really, roles for the moon and the sun in our Jewish lives. One is to separate, distinguish between day and night. And the other one is to help us calculate our days, our months, and also our seasons and our celebrations and holidays. All right. It's important to know that. I'll already throw to your minds a question. We will refer to it soon. If this is so important for God to create those two lights, right, the sun and the moon, to separate between day and night, what is an eclipse then? Because in an eclipse, the moon and the sun are in the same place, right? The moon shadows the sun. For 3, 4, 5 minutes, it's going to be dark, especially if you're in the middle, exactly where the path of the eclipse will be. And it's almost like you're going to see nightfall in the middle of the day, 3 p.m. It's going to be dark, right? It's almost like we're blurring this distinction between day and night, which was the initial intention of God when he created the moon and the sun. So it's an interesting question to ask. Maybe it's not such a positive thing, right, to blur those differences. We'll get back to that in a moment. I want to continue just with the source because the Torah tells us, and again in source number one, God made the two great lights, the greater light to dominate the day and the smaller light to dominate the night and the stars. Now, there's a very famous question that is asked. Wait a minute. On the one hand, the Torah called those, the moon and the sun, called it the two great lights. But on the other hand, we're said there is a greater light and there is a smaller light. Right? You see that? The Torah said two great lights. I would assume they're equally big. Right? But then we're told there's one that is bigger than the other. One is smaller than the other. So this question was raised among the rabbis for many, many, many generations. There's different answers given to that. I want to quote Rashi. famous Rashi that is brought there, brought in source number two, and it's even more in detail if you want to look later on in source number three. He quotes the Gemara in source number three, but we'll read the brief version that Rashi brings in. In source number two, Rashi says, what are the two great luminaries? What are those two great lights? He says, they were created of equal size. Actually, the sun and the moon, according to this tradition, were created at equal size. They were both at the same size, the sun and the moon. However, he says, but that of the moon was diminished. The size of the moon was diminished. The moon was shrunk by God. God shrunk the moon. Why? Because the moon complained and said, it is impossible for two kings to make use of one crown. This is a long story, beautiful story that is brought in source number three. I'll read it outside and I'll tell you that God created those two moons equally. And the moon was like, wait a minute, why do I need to share, you know, the same universe with the sun? Why should I do this? I don't want to share the same crown with the sun. It's or me or the sun. So God said, no problem, we'll shrink you and the sun will remain the dominant and the biggest light. And there is the discussion there between God and the moon. Why does God do it? And so on. There's a lot of nice interpretations into it. You can read it later on. It's not really our discussion today. But why I brought this source is because we need to know that, first of all, the sun and the moon are there to be separated. They're not there to be together. So whenever we see it, we witness an event where the sun and the moon are in the same place and they're shadowing one another. This is a very special event also in the eyes of the Torah. Right, not only in the eyes of science, because they were created in order to be separated from one another. And not only they were separated from one another, one was shrinked and the other one was enlarged, so they can actually be different. So when we're going to experience an eclipse tomorrow afternoon, we should ask ourselves, so what's the spiritual meaning of such an event, right? Because it shouldn't be taken for granted, also from the Jewish source, that this would be that this would be actually something that is, you know, usual. Miriam asks, "What is the explanation for seeing the moon during the day? The scientific or the religious one?"
The religious one.
I don't know. Interesting question. I'm not sure. Good question. I'll try to check afterwards, and maybe I'll get back to you. Good question. I'm not sure. What's the religious, if there is a religious explanation to why sometimes we can see the moon at daytime?
A good question. The moon is supposed to be for the night. Is good there question. During the day also very often?
The only thing I can tell you is that I think the light of the moon should be there for night. I mean, we know that the moon doesn't have its own light, right? It gets the light from the sun. We just, right, it's mirroring the light from the sun, and that's what lights up our nights. I would say that the moon at daytime has no significance because it's not lighting anything, right? You know, it's not helping with anything because the sun is there. But interesting question to see. I want to show you from rabbinic texts that maybe because what we said, because it should be distinguished that the sun is for the day and the moon is for the night, that this is an eclipse. And I'm sorry to ruin the party here, that an eclipse is maybe not necessarily such a positive event. All right. And I'll say straightforward, and I'll tell you that based on most sources, most Jewish sources, an eclipse is actually a negative event, not a positive event. All right, and I want to show you there are three different sources that brought up at the same place. They're both in source number 4, 5, and 6. They're both all the three are from Talmud Sukkah 29a, and the Talmud discusses there, they all agree that that it is a bad thing, that an eclipse is actually a bad thing. The question is, to whom it is actually bad? All right, that's really the question. We all agree it's bad. The question is, to whom is it bad? So I brought the three sources. Take a look in source number four. The Gemara in Sukkah says that the rabbis taught in a braita, they learned and they said, at the time, one second, what just happened here? Let's do this. So the rabbis taught in a braita, and said, at the time that the sun is striking. What's striking? In Hebrew, the idea of an eclipse, or the word of an eclipse, anyone knows what's the Hebrew word for an eclipse, by the way, for a solar eclipse? Anyone here? Maybe? No? So let me tell you. The Hebrew word for a solar eclipse is likui chama. Likui chama. Chama is another word for the sun. We have Shemesh, but Chama is also a word for the sun. Likui comes from the word Lehalkot or Malkot, which means to strike, to hit, right? The Hebrew word for an eclipse is when the sun is striked, hit. It's already in the word itself, it is a little bit negative, right? In the word itself, in the name of an eclipse, in Hebrew, it's already a little bit negative because it's based on the Talmud. The Talmud says when the sun is striking, when there is an eclipse, all right, it is a bad sign for the entire world, the Gemara tells us. Why is it a bad sign for the entire world? To what can this be compared? It is comparable, says the Gemara, to a king who made a banquet for his people and placed a lamp before them so they can see what they are eating. Then the king suddenly became angry with them and commanded, take the lamp before them and let them sit in darkness. All right? In the eyes of the Talmud, and that's the first source I want to show you, when we're just taking out the light from the world, this is a bad sign. All right. Now, obviously, today we're blessed with electricity and we can have our own lamps at home and we can light our houses and we're not, you know, we're not as dependent on the sun as we used to be. But imagine 2,000 years ago when people were only dependent on the light from the sun during the day. And suddenly for 5 minutes, suddenly out of the blue, for 5 minutes, total darkness. Total darkness. People don't know what to do. They don't see what they're doing. They don't see where they're going. We need to think about it from their perspective. From ancient perspective, having an eclipse is almost like a traumatic event, right? It's almost, as the Gemara says, like the king who brought everyone to the table, put the lamps on, turned the lights on so they can eat what they're see what they're eating, and then turned off the lights and no one can see anything, right? It's almost like God just, you know, pressed the switch and turned off the lights of the world. And from that perspective, it is very understandable why this would be traumatic, why this would be a bad sign for the entire world. It's almost like God is angry at us when he closes the light, right? When he shuts off the light of the world. That's one perspective. You can see that, again, today we don't really experience it. Wow, it's amazing, but we're not afraid of not having the sun up, right? But in ancient times, they were very dependent on this. And again, suddenly, out of the blue, it's not like they had the calculation that you'd know when this will happen like today. Out of the blue, for 5 minutes, total darkness by the in the middle of the day. This is a religious, a spiritual event that is very traumatic. And we need to understand that. Another opinion is brought in the same Gemara. In source number 5, the Talmud says that the rabbis taught in a Braita, at the time that the sun is striking, it is bad omen for idolaters. It's bad omen for non-Jews. Now, this is a different opinion. It's not bad for the entire world. It's bad for part of the world. Why is it bad for part of the world? When the moon is striking, it is a bad omen for the Jewish people. Why is it a bad thing for the Jewish people? Because we go according to the moon. We calculate everything according to the moon, right? For the Jews calculate according to the moon, our months, our days. So when the moon is striking, when we have this lunar eclipse, this is bad for us. But when it is a solar eclipse, like the non-Jewish people, they follow the sun in their calculation, in their calendar, then it is a bad sign for them. All right? So there's an even bit in the Talmud. It's not bad for us. For us, it's okay because we don't follow the sun. But for those who follow the sun, and I want to also add, worship the sun. I think what the Talmud here is referring to is those a lot of pagan ancient nations who lived around the Middle East served or worshiped the sun. For those of you who want, this coming Wednesday night at Shaar HaTfilah, I will be giving a class on the plague of darkness, which is very much, I want to say, very timely for this as well. And we will see there that from the eyes of the Egyptians who worshipped the god Ra, who was the god of the sun, the plague of darkness is a really bad plague. All right, we'll get to that Bezrat Hashem on Wednesday night. Everyone is welcome to Shaar HaTfilah on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. And I'll also add, by the way, that someone told me, I'm not sure if it's true or not, I haven't checked, that the next total full eclipse in the world will be taking place in 3 years in Egypt. All right, so it's also interesting to think about it from that perspective. And when? During Pesach. So that's also very interesting. Yeah, also very interesting. We have another plague of darkness. So if anyone wants to travel to Egypt on Pesach in 3 years, we'll arrange a mission to Egypt to see the thing itself. So that's for source number five. It's only bad for the non-Jews, but for the Jews, it's actually okay because we don't follow the sun anyway. The last source, source number six, is the source that I want to focus a little bit longer on because it's a little bit disturbing. And you'll understand why in a moment. The Gemara adds and says a different opinion in source number six. The sages taught that on account of four matters, the sun is eclipsed. One, on account of a president of a court who dies and is not eulogized appropriately. That's number one. Number two, the eclipse is a type of eulogy by heaven, we're said. Two, on account of a betrothed, engaged young woman who screamed in the city that she was being raped and there was no one to rescue her. Three, and we'll take it with a little bit of amount of sensitivity here, on account of homosexual intercourse. And four, on account of two brothers whose blood was spilled as one. Okay, this source for itself, maybe deserves an entire hour just to explain what's going on here. I don't have an entire hour to explain this source, unfortunately. But I do want to share something that I feel from here. First of all, we can all agree that those four types of what the Gemara calls sins are something that are related to the Jewish people. So unlike the first source who said it's bad for the entire world, and also unlike the second source that said it's bad only for non-Jews, this is bad for the Jews. This is bad for things we did stuff that are against the Torah's laws, the Torah's Hashem's commandment, and therefore the sun was eclipsed. Almost like this, the eclipse is like a punishment to those sins. That's number one that I want to establish. We'll get back to that in a moment. So it's bad also or only for the Jews. A second thing that I want to say, and I'm not going to have the time to dive into all those four things and try to figure out what's the connection between all the four and why do they do for an eclipse, especially giving the sensitivity of the third one, right, of a homosexual relationship, and why is that considered to be something that brings on an eclipse. I want to say, and I want to think, I think that we can maybe draw a common line, at least between some of those. And I brought in source number seven, an explanation which I loved. I think it's a fabulous explanation that I found in Chidushei Agadot on the Shas, on the Talmud. Brought says the following thing. A young woman who screamed in the city, why, God forbid, there's a woman who she's raped, she screams, no one helps her, why this brings an eclipse? The Chidushei Agadot in verse 7 says, it was clear as day that this young woman needs help, and still no one helped her. I think what the Gemara is telling us is that it's not necessarily, and that's my reading, it's not necessarily that those four sins bring on, you know, there are scientific reasons for an eclipse. As an eclipse is used here almost as a parable, as a symbol, that when something is as clear as the sun, you know what is good, you know what you need to do, but you don't do it. You don't see this clarity. It's clear as a day, but you don't do this. It's like an eclipse. I want to say it's a moral eclipse, an ethical eclipse that a person might have, right? And I brought, there's a small screenshot on the side, on the left side of it, from the website of the Academia Lelashon Ivrit, the Hebrew, called the Academy for the Hebrew Language, the Academy for the Hebrew Language in Yerushalayim, was established by Eliezer ben Yehuda hundreds of years ago, and they are the one who's in charge of the Hebrew language today. If you want to find definitions in Hebrew dictionary and so on, then that's the place. And there is in Hebrew today we use there's a term, a phrase called likuy me'orot, like total eclipse, both lunar and solar eclipse. And we use it when we say that someone just lost his compass, like he lost his consciousness, like he doesn't know what he's doing, he lost his direction, like his moral, ethical direction, his ethical past. It's called likuy me'orot. All right, I think that's my understanding from here. I think this is what the Talmud is telling us, that when the something is as bright as the sun, you know what you need to do, but nevertheless you don't do this, then it's an eclipse. That's an eclipse, right? So I'm not sure how much this is a scientific reasons for an eclipse, as they are, I want to say, moral explanations or reasons where a person could actually, he knew what he needs to do, but he didn't do this. There's different explanations as well. For example, the fact that we talk about the president of court, that no one eulogized him after he passed away, That's a person that dedicated his life to help people, to judge between them, to bring justice to the world. And no one cares after he passes away. Like this is a moral eclipse, right? Two brothers that are killed on the same day, right? This is like no, like what is going on here? There's a family that is being. This is very much relevant, I think, also to October 7th, where total families are like just slaughtered on the same day, and the world is silent. The world is silent. I think we live today. There's no more better timing for an eclipse like the timing that we have today in this world, where we live in a total moral eclipse today. And where families are losing their life, and her family, they're lost his life, its life in one day, and the world is silent over this. This is a total moral, I want to say, ethical eclipse. And I think this is what the Gemara is referring to. So that's my answering to this. However, and I'm shocked no one asked this yet, and I brought the question here after source number 7. I brought a question on the sheet. Given that the solar eclipses are predictable and occur at a precise times, how should we interpret the Gemara's assertion that implies that they are divine response to human behavior? Right? If we know already that the next eclipse in Toronto will be in 120 years, how can that be a consequence of human actions, of human behavior? So one answer is the answer I brought to you. I don't think it's actually a scientific eclipse as it is a moral eclipse. However, there are other explanations, very creative, that I want to share with you. How can actually a solar eclipse be a result of human behavior? I want to bring two, three different ideas. The first idea, brought in source number 8, in a book called Tchumin 24. It's an idea that is brought by Rabbi Yehonatan Eifshitz. And it says as follows. It's quoted as follows in source number 8. In one of his teaching, Rabbi Yehonatan Eifshitz address this question, the question of how could that be a consequence of human, how can eclipse be a consequence of human behavior? And he said, stating that the intention of our sages is not regarding the solar eclipse that we are familiar with, but rather the black spots that occasionally appear on the sun or the moon, those sunspots that occasionally appear on the sun or the moon. If you know what I'm talking about, sometimes, once in a while, there might be those black shades on the sun or the moon. And what he says is, Rav Eifshitz, that this is unpredictable. And this is to suggest what the Gemara is referring to. And since this is unpredictable, then obviously we can also say that it happens due to human behavior. All right, that's his explanation. According to him, the appearance of these spots is unexpected and is dependent on human actions. All right, so interestingly, we can say here that there maybe we don't talk the Gemara when it says eclipse. It doesn't talk about a regular eclipse like we have here, like behind me. Rather, it is those sunspots that appear here and there on the sun or the moon. What's the problem with this answer? Anyone? What's the problem? No, we're all good. We're all convinced. Folks, we're talking about the Gemara. The Gemara was written 1800 years ago. Sunspots are only visible with a telescope. Come on. Come on. Really? Really? No one? No one? So, I mean, it's a beautiful answer, but it's just not, I don't think it goes along with reality of the time. Like the sages of the Gemara that didn't have a telescope, didn't have those equipment where they can actually look at the sun or the moon and see exactly those black spots on it. How could they know this is actually happening? No, think about it for a moment, right? So Rabbi Nathan Farber, which I used his, he had a wonderful research on the solar eclipse in halachic perspectives. He teaches at DRS school, boys high school in Yeshiva in New York. And he put on this beautiful paper that I used also to prepare this class. I also want to thank him for his amazing job and what he did. He quotes this Rabbi Yehonatan Eifshitz, and he actually says, wait a minute, this is a problem. And why is it a problem? I brought it down in source number 9. Sorry. He says the following thing, Rabbi Nathan Farber. He says, there are several issues with this interpretation. Firstly, sunspots were virtually invisible before the telescope was invented, right? We said that. Given their difficulty to perceive with the naked eye, it's highly improbable that the sages of the Gemara were referring to sunspots. So first of all, that's a problem. That's a big problem for itself. Second of all, and he quotes interestingly, I didn't know that. He quotes that some scientists argue that also sunspot activity can also follow a natural cycle that can be predicted. And he says that Galileo observed and documented the sunspots were persistent and moved slowly across the sun's surface in a predictable manner. I have no idea if that was proven to be true or not. I'm not an astrologist, and I don't know. I have no idea what's going on there. But it makes sense that this answer will not be, as I want to say, as appealing maybe, or as getting along with reality because of this, right? So, but you know, this is one answer of how that could be. How could sun eclipse be? Solar eclipse can be based on human behavior. Another opinion was brought surprisingly by the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, in a letter in 1957, Lubavitcher Rebbe was a Rebbe of Chabad. We all know of him. In 1957, he was asked, I don't know if there was an eclipse somewhere. There was an eclipse. The last eclipse was in 57, maybe. And I'm not familiar. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. New York area. I don't know. Maybe there was. But in 57, he was asked about a solar eclipse. And he said, he was asked, like, how could that be a consequence of human behavior? And he had a very creative, a very nice answer. Take a look in source number 10. He says, Rabbi Nathan Farber also quoted him, and he says that in a 1957 response, the Lubavitcher Rebbe noted that while a solar eclipse could actually be predicted, the local weather conditions could not. All right? What the Lubavitcher Rebbe said is that, wait a minute, no, no, no. An eclipse for sure will happen, right? But you cannot know that will be a cloudy day. We are not yet sure how, you know, cloudy it will be tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. We're not sure yet. When we're a day before it, we can maybe we say a little bit, like, we're not sure, right? Says in the Lubavitcher Rebbe, it's not about whether there will be an eclipse or wouldn't be an eclipse, as it is whether we will be able to see the eclipse or not, right? I think it's a very creative answer, but there's a little bit of a problem with this as well. Nu, what's the problem with this answer? I didn't have your breakfast yet. It's too early in the morning for you. What's the problem with the Lubavitcher's answer?
Is it the eclipse will be happening even though we can't see it?
I'll take it one step forward, Claudette. Wait, anyone else want to say?
Well, it's the same thing.
Same thing. Miriam also wants
to
say.
You can see it,
anyway.
Will get dark. Even
yeah,
if
I'm saying it will still be dark. Sam, maybe you're not going to see that ring, this beautiful ring behind me or whatever that's going to be, right? But by the end of the day, it will be dark. Something different will happen, even though it's cloudy, right? It's still gonna be dark somehow. So he says the following thing. He says, continuing reading source number 10, whether a solar or lunar eclipse would be visible through the clouds was uncertain. And since this aspect was under divine control, it could potentially change the response to the actions of the people. But he says this explanation, however, also presents significant challenges. Firstly, weather patterns are predictable to some extent. And we know they are predictable to some extent. Like we can assume what's going to happen tomorrow, even if we don't know for sure, right? That's number one. However, he says more problematic is the fact that a total solar eclipse remains fully visible regardless of cloud cover, right? Like it will be dark, while clouds may obstruct the view of the moment of conjunction as the moon covers the sun, as well as the visibility of stars, the darkness akin to night during the total eclipse would still be apparent. So also, I think the wonderful answer by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and we can all assume that maybe the weather is based on our behavior, and that may be for a different class. But scientifically, it's not as strong to say that. So what can we say? What can we suggest? I have my own answer. I don't think it's actually a real scientific solar eclipse. I think what the Gemara was talking about is, as I said, an ethical eclipse, a moral eclipse, where you know what is right and what needs to be done as clear as day, but then something happened and just, you know, this is hidden from you and you choose to not follow it. You choose to be blind here. Yes, Shoshana? The question? So that's my answer. But there's another answer given from the Akedat Yitzchak. The Akedat Yitzchak, I brought it in source number 11. The Akedat Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Arame, is lived about 600, 700 years ago. His answer is quoted also by the Ramah. Rebbe Moshe Isserlish for 400 or 500 years ago, the Ashkenazi rabbi. And he, again, 600, 700 years ago, he was the first one to actually say that when the Talmud refers to a solar eclipse, it doesn't refer to a scientific solar eclipse, as it refers to a symbol of an eclipse. And he says, and I brought in source number 11, I brought the English and the Hebrew, the screenshot from his book. He says in source number 11, said that when the rabbis of the Talmud said that there are four reasons for an eclipse, they referred to the passing of the giant lights. Who are those giant lights that are passing away? The people of God, big rabbis, Torah scholars, and leaders of the Jewish people, as they are often compared to the sun. And he quotes on, I brought it in source number 11 in the thing itself. He says, and he quotes the Gemara, there's a Talmud in Yuma 31b that talks about how when there was every leader of the Jewish people had his own sun, we call it. And when his sun rise, then another leader's sun set, and so on. All right, we say that when the Jewish leader that is rise in among the people, it's like the sun rising among us. Onto the world. And he says, when the Gemara talks about the sun, it's not the scientific sun or the scientific eclipse, as it is actually a symbol that the leaders of the Jewish people, when they pass away, it is because of our behavior. And this is, I'll tell you, the footnote, this is actually supported by different sources. All right, this is supported by different sources in the Talmud, where it says that the leaders of the Jewish people actually pay the price for the behavior of their people. They have responsibility on the sins of the people, and sometimes the leader might pass away because of the sins or the behavior of the Jewish people. So what Rabbi Yitzchak Arame in source number 11, what he brings down, I don't think it's that far-fetched to say that the Gemara was actually referring to leaders, and they called it a solar eclipse because leaders are often referred to sons. And I think it makes sense. And again, this is written 700 years ago, so it makes sense that also for him, he was like, I'm not sure scientifically this is actually something that can make sense. Whether we follow one of those explanations, just to conclude this part, I think we can all see from here that from Jewish sources, we don't really see so much positivity regarding a solar eclipse. We might say it's not bad for us, that it is bad for those who follow the sun. But even that, like by the end of the day, most of the sources are pretty negative. And they do say that a solar eclipse represents, if not a moral eclipse, and it represents something that is bad, like God just want to turn off the lights of the world, and therefore it's something that is shouldn't be taking as a celebrational event. All right, so I'm sorry to ruin the party for tomorrow, but from the Jewish perspective, maybe there's not so much to celebrate, and we'll see more of that in a moment. Yes, Rose.
I just want to make a point that the fact that it could hurt you goes along with the fact that it's not such a positive thing. I mean,
Yeah.
it can cause macular spots and it's very dangerous. So
Yep,
that goes
exactly.
along
We
with
need to
your
be very
theory.
dangerous tomorrow, not looking at it when you drive and so on. Exactly. Let
Sometimes I think that we are living today with an eclipse because it seems like the light of the world is not visible at the moment.
Yeah. That's what I mentioned, that I think that there's no better time for an eclipse, a real eclipse, than the life when the time we live in right now, where we live in a total moral eclipse, and as we
It
see in
seems like the
Isaiah.
world is having a shadow over it at the moment.
We know that the light, the day represents goodness, and the darkness, the moon represents maybe the badness in the world. And when those two are blurred and you don't see one another, the badness covers the goodness, and you think that what's good is bad and what's bad is good. Then this is the total moral eclipse.
But if we can look at it that with an eclipse, the light returns. So we all have to hold on to the fact that even though it's dark now, that the light will return and it will
Exactly.
shine brighter.
4 or 5 minutes and the light will be back on.
Yeah.
Definitely. Thank you, Claudette. Beautiful. I want to follow any other question before I move on? Okay. I want to move on to a different question that I'm not sure how many of you will actually think about it as a question. But now that we established that an eclipse might actually be something that is a little bit negative by Jewish texts, There is a question in halakha, in Jewish law, is one allowed to publicize the event of an eclipse? Are we allowed to tell our friends, let's go out together, we'll watch the eclipse that will take place tomorrow at 3:30 p.m.? Is that a thing? That's actually a question. Why is that a question? I'll give you a little bit of a background. In source number 12, I'm quoting the Shulchan Aruch. There is a halakha, there is a bracha, a blessing, that is often traditionally recited over the appearance of a rainbow. Right? There is a blessing that is said over the appearance of the rainbow. What is the blessing? I brought in source number 12. The Shulchan Aruch tells us that one who sees the rainbow says, blessed are you, God our Lord, King of the world, who remembers the covenant, who is faithful to his covenant, and who fulfills his word. What covenant are we talking about in this bracha?
With Noah.
Noah! Noah, exactly. That's the first rainbow, right? What happened in Noah? I'm sorry I didn't bring it on the source sheet. What happened was that after the world was flooded with the flood, and Noah and his family and the animals were saved in the ark, God brings out a rainbow. And he tells Noah, every time you see this rainbow, you shall remember the covenant that I have with you, that even though the world might need to be destroyed, I will not bring another flood, because I have compassion upon the people of the world. And according to tradition, every time one sees a rainbow in the skies, this is the symbol, the covenant. God is telling us, maybe be careful from what you're doing. Maybe there's big problems right now, because you might be on the edge of Noah generation, that because of what they did, they got the flood. Be careful. Like, this is a sign. This is a warning sign. You see a rainbow, it's a warning sign that God tells us, be careful on your behavior. Maybe you need to look back onto yourself and try to see what you can fix, right? Because maybe you're not on the right path. Maybe you're not doing the right thing. So according to that, we say a bracha that says, thank you, God, for remembering this covenant. Thank you for, you know, keeping up with the word that you gave to us at the times of Noah. And the Shulchan Aruch continues and says, and it is forbidden to stare upon it excessively. All right, there is a halacha that said that a person is not allowed to stare at a rainbow. Surprisingly, I'm sure many of us never heard of this. The reason is because it is a bad sign. Don't enjoy this. It's a bad sign. From Jewish perspective, the rainbow, as beautiful as it can be, is just like, you know, it symbolizes when people are acting in bad ways. There's a lot to be said about why a rainbow is the symbol, the fact that you have all the colors on the spectrum inside that represent all the different people in the world. You want to remind other people that you need to be, to respect others and so on. There's a lot of beautiful answers given into that, right? Into this colorfulness of the rainbow and the beautiful rainbow and so on. But according to Shulchan Aruch, by the way, many disagree with him. So don't worry if you like to stare in rainbows. Don't stop doing it right now only because of this source. Some disagree with the Shulchan Aruch here. I don't want to, you know, I'm already ruining the solar eclipse. I don't want to ruin the rainbow as well. But this is a thing, right? Not to look at the rainbow because it's bad. Not only not staring at a rainbow, also the Mishnah Brura, the Chafetz Chaim, the commentary, Ashkenazic commentary on Shulchan Aruch or Chaim, in source number 13, says the following thing. It says that one who sees a rainbow, it isn't appropriate, he says, to tell one's friend that there is a rainbow because of spreading bad rumors that the world deserves to be destroyed. Says the Mishnah Brura, what are you celebrating here when there's a rainbow? You go out to your friend, you tell him, take a look, there's a rainbow outside. What are you telling him? Take a look, we're all bad people. That's what you're telling him when you tell him to show to look at the rainbow? Says the Mishnah Brura, we're not actually allowed to publicize a rainbow. We're not allowed to tell people, take a look outside, there's a rainbow. Again, not everyone agrees with this, but this is an opinion that is brought in Jewish books, in halakhic books, that whenever I remember being in school, maybe you also remember it, when you sit in the classroom, there's a rainbow outside, and one of the kids is like, take a look, there's a rainbow, and you all run to the window to watch it. According to Mishnah Berurah, that's not a legit thing to do, because a rainbow actually represents, symbolizes something that is bad. The question then should be, now we already established that an eclipse is also something that represents something that is negative, maybe we shouldn't publicize an eclipse. No? It's also a question, right? If an eclipse also represents something that is bad, like a rainbow, maybe we shouldn't publicize the eclipse. Yes, Rose?
I think because of what we just said, that people can get hurt by the eclipse by not publicizing it, and you're not warning people, you're actually hurting people.
actually hurting people by not publicizing it?
Yes, because of the fact that we know that it can be dangerous. So if you tell nobody,
okay,
and nobody understands,
you're talking
and
about an eclipse, not about a rainbow. Yeah. Okay, so I'm not. Thank you for pointing this out. What Rose is saying is that we should tell people to be careful when there is an eclipse, not looking at the sun when they're driving, and so on. So obviously, from a perspective of safety, for sure, you need to say it to everyone. I'm asking from the perspective of a negative omen or from a negative sign, is it still something that should be publicized? I brought in source number 14 an answer. Rabbi Avigdor Nevenzahl from Yerushalayim was also asked this question, whether one can actually publicize an eclipse. And his answer, I'll skip source number 14 to the answer. His answer was that it is actually permitted. That it's actually permitted, and it is permitted. Why? Because it is predetermined and appears on the calendar. So unlike a rainbow, which is out of the blue, right? You don't know. You cannot really determine, like the predetermine whether a rainbow will be there or not. A solar eclipse is already inherited predetermined. We know when the next one will be. So therefore, this is something that is something that it can actually be publicized. Maybe if we wouldn't know when eclipse happens, we would not also publicize eclipses. But because we know when eclipses happen, it's actually okay to publicize, as well as what Rose mentioned, that for the safety of the people, it's better to actually publicize it. I think it's an important thing to say. I'll also just throw into this discussion that when we talk about rainbows, there is a halachic question about, does one say a bracha, a blessing, over the rainbow in Niagara Falls? Now, while I speak, I think about it, that I'm speaking to all Canadians here, and I'm sure none of you took the Maid of the Mist, because it's for tourists. But if you did take the Maid of the Mist, the ferry on the falls, first of all, you should. The fact that you're Canadian doesn't mean you shouldn't enjoy it as well. It's amazing, spectacular, beautiful. You definitely should do it. All right? That's number one. But second of all, if you take the Maid of the Mist, you will see that every time during daytime, when you pass the American Falls, you'll see there's a permanent rainbow there because of the drops from the water that comes down from the waterfall. And one of the questions in Halakha was, if someone sees this rainbow, should he say a bracha? So do you say the bracha on a rainbow or not when he says this rainbow? To cut it short, I'll tell you that the answer is no. One shouldn't say the bracha on this rainbow because this is not a rainbow that happened suddenly, right? Like we say here. It's we say predetermined. Like we know it will be there tomorrow morning. We know it will be there next week. We know it will be there in 500 years from now, right? So because we know this will be there and it's not out of the blue, one should not say this bracha. All right, so next time you're in the Maid of the Mist, first of all, go. Second of all, if you see this rainbow, don't say any blessing upon a rainbow that is there. Just enjoy the rainbow and stare at it, no problem. Because this is not the rainbow that the rabbi said one should not stare at. And this is not a rainbow of bad sign. I want to finish in the last 10 minutes that are left with the last topic of on a solar eclipse. And this is the question, should one say a blessing on a solar eclipse, right? If we already established that one say a blessing on a rainbow, maybe one should also say a blessing on a solar eclipse. I don't know. Maybe there's a special blessing that one should say on seeing an eclipse. This is a once in a lifetime event. Why not, you know, saying a bracha, right? I'll just say for the sake of the discussion that the brachas that I'm talking about is not what we call shehecheyanu. Now, we know that when someone does something new for the first time, wears a new garment, eats a new fruit on Rosh Hashanah, makes Kiddush and Yom Tov, we add, or even on lighting the Hanukkah candles, the menorah candles on the first night of Hanukkah, we add another bracha called Shehecheyanu, which is the bracha that we say when we do a mitzvah or something new for the first time. We thank God that He brought us to this occasion. This is not the bracha that I'm talking about. Unfortunately, I don't have the time to ask whether one should say Shehecheyanu on an eclipse or not. Rather than that, the bracha that I'm referring to is the bracha on natural phenomena. And I brought it down in source number 15. The Shulchan Aruch says that upon a comet, and take a look, he explains what a comet is, which is like a type of a star that is seen like an arrow across the sky from place to place, whose light stretches like a staff, and upon an earthquake, the shaking of the earth, and upon lightning, and upon thunder, and upon winds that blow angrily, and upon huge mountains, and beautiful views, spectacular views, if someone goes and watches and sees them, on each of this one says Blessed are you, God our Lord, King of the world, creator of the original first creation. Oseh Maaseh Bereshit. The one that does, that creates the creation of Genesis, of Bereshit. That's the bracha. If someone sees spectacular things, he says the bracha. That's the bracha. When you say, if you see thunders, you hear a thunder, if you see lightning, if there is spectacular winds, like almost like a tornado or something like that, things that are, so spectacular, I want to say natural events that are not supernatural, but they're natural phenomena that happen in this world, we do say a bracha when we see them, or when we hear them. Also, when we see beautiful places, a huge mountain, beautiful lakes, places like that, we do say the bracha. When I went 2 years ago in the summer, it was Priel, we went to Alberta, we went to Lake Louise, I said the bracha of Oseh Maaseh Bereshit, because for me it was so spectacular, it was so beautiful that it deserved to say a bracha. And I had the opportunity to say a bracha on a natural phenomenon, which I think was beautiful. You see glaciers, you see mountains, you see lakes, this is just beautiful. You want to thank God for his creation of the world. So that's a wonderful opportunity to say a bracha. I'll also add as a footnote, back to our discussion about Niagara Falls, there is also a question if one says the bracha over Niagara Falls when he first visits there. According to many rabbis, yes. When one goes to Niagara Falls, visits Niagara Falls for the first time, since it's a natural phenomenon, one, if he is obviously impressed by the falls, he should actually cite the bracha, Oseh Maaseh Bereshit, over the Niagara Falls. All right, so you should know that as well, that when we first went to Niagara Falls, when we came, actually it was before Toronto, I visited it before we came to Toronto with my family, I said the bracha of Oseh Maaseh Bereshit because it deserves to say a bracha over. All right, so the question is, should we also say a bracha over an eclipse? Maybe we should say the bracha of Oseh Maaseh Bereshit, the one who creates the creation of Genesis, should be said also upon an eclipse. Sorry, Michelle?
But it's not a beautiful thing.
Okay, but also thunder is not a beautiful thing. It's a natural phenomenon. It's not only about beauty, right? A lightning is not a beautiful thing necessarily. Winds are not beautiful. It's not only about something that is beautiful, as it is about a natural phenomenon. All right, it's something that is spectacular, that you see it and you are like, wow, look at this world, right? Like, I don't know, while watching the National Geographic and seeing a beautiful thing, and you're like, this is an amazing thing. Aryeh?
Yeah. Sorry. I was going to say, maybe it's because you say a bracha on Rosh Chodesh, and so it's already covered because the eclipse
Aryeh suggests that we already say the bracha, well, we say... I want to separate it. We say different brachot on the moon. That's right. We have something called Kiddush Levana. Kiddush Levana is when I want to say according to Ashkenazim, the Motzei Shabbos following Rosh Chodesh, when the moon is already slightly visible in the skies, and you can see the moon. Then you go out at night and you say a special bracha on the fact that the moon was reborn. We call it recreated. And this is like the bracha that we say on Chodesh as well. Aryeh suggests maybe when we say this bracha on the Chodesh, on the month, maybe you also say this bracha, it's like the bracha on a solar eclipse. I want to argue against that and to say that when I say a bracha on an eclipse, it's not a bracha on the moon or a bracha on the sun. It's a bracha on the phenomenon of the moon being exactly where the sun is and blocking it. All right? It's exactly this thing. It's not about the object moon or the object sun, as it is about those things together. All right. By the way, there is a bracha called the bracha of the Shemesh, Birkat HaShemesh, Birkat HaChama, which is said once in 25 years on the sun. That's for a different discussion as well. This happens exactly, I'll just say, when the sun is exactly above you. Exactly above you. All right. There's a bracha about that. Maybe we'll talk about it when the next one's going to happen. I think in like... maybe 10 years, 8, 9, 10 years, we might have a bracha for this as well. But that's for a different discussion, all right? That's not for this. But what my question is, do we say the bracha on an eclipse, on those two together? So the Rebbe Milubavitch, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, in source number 16, back to the letter that he was asked about an eclipse, says the following thing. It is a known principle that one should not innovate a blessing that is not mentioned in the Talmud. First of all, there's no blessing upon this in the Talmud. The Talmud didn't mention an eclipse as something to need a blessing on, so we're not going to invent a new blessing on. But he says that one explanation for this is that we do not bless upon something associated with idolatry because it is a sign of impending disaster. Remember, we said it's a bad thing. If a solar eclipse is a bad sign, says on the contrary, what is required in such situation is prayer, fasting, crying out, not blessing. Right? If we said it's a bad thing, why would we say a blessing upon it? We should all have a fast day tomorrow instead. Anyone joins me in fast day tomorrow? No, no one? No? No takers? No one want to fast tomorrow? Okay, no, sure. So never mind. But it should be a fast day. It should be a day of prayer. It should be something we need to cry out to God. We shouldn't, you know, say, oh, thank you, God, for the eclipse. Like, it's not a good thing, right? It's actually a bad thing. So one of the reasons, says the Rebbe, that we don't say a bracha over an eclipse is because it's a bad omen, and we don't say brachot, blessings, over something that is like that bad. A different answer was given by the chief rabbi of Israel, Rabbi David Lau, in source number 17. Chief rabbi of Israel, Rabbi Lau, answered, he was also asked, should one say a bracha over an eclipse? And he said the following thing, I'm reading source number 17, the last source on the source sheet. He said the three different stuff. First thing he said, I also thought on the day of the solar eclipse regarding the eclipses of the luminaries, but we do not concord, he says, new blessing. We're not allowed to like create new blessings, not on the moon, not on the sun, something that we just don't do. That's very similar to the idea of the Rebbe Milobavitch. But take a look in the second part, he says, and he adds a different answer. He says, the reason that we do not bless on eclipses is because a new creation has not been made, right? Take a moment, right? And not necessarily because of the reason you mentioned that in both instances we don't find the blessing. The reason that he talked about is the bad sign. He says, wait a minute. It's not enough to say that an eclipse is bad to say we don't say a bracha, because we do say a bracha on a rainbow, and we said a rainbow is bad, right? So obviously we can also say a bracha on this. Also, there is a Jewish idea, Adam chayav levarech al ha-ra'a kishem shemevarech al ha-tova. A person has to say thank you for the bad and say thank you for the good. All right, that's also something that we have. So maybe one should pay gratitude to the solar to God on a solar eclipse as well. Says Rav Lau that the idea here is that it's not, we can't say the bracha of Osem Maaseh Bereshit, the one who created the creation of Genesis, because the eclipse was not created. It's not a creation. Again, we talk about the moon. The moon was created. The sun was created. But an eclipse, the event of an eclipse, is not a creation. It's just timing, right? And how do we know it's not a creation? Because it depends where you are, right? If you're going to stand in a different place on Earth, you're not going to even see this, right? It's a phenomenon that is based on time and space. It's not a creation. It's not a new thing that happened in the world that God created in the times of Genesis. It's not a wonderful mountain that you see. It's not a thunder that you hear, that God created thunders. It's something that happens only because the sun and the moon are exactly at the same place at the same time, and you happen to be where you can actually watch this. Says Rav Lau, on such an occasion, on such an event, which is based on time, we do not say the bracha of Osem Maaseh Bereshit, and therefore, none of us, and there is no one who says one can actually say a blessing over an eclipse, so it's not something we do. But Rav Lau suggests that one can actually say Tehillim, Psalms, on an eclipse, and he recommends Tehillim 19 and Tehillim 104, where he talks about how the nature and us bless and praise God, how all elements of nature, the moon, the sun, the trees, the stones, the earth, how everything in creation is actually meant to praise God and serves in the creation of and serves as worshiping God and helps us praise it. So if we can summarize our class, we would say definitely according to Jewish sources, there's a lot to be said about an eclipse. It's definitely a natural phenomenon. It's definitely something that we should pay attention to, but not everyone agrees it's actually a positive thing. But nevertheless, it's something that is there. We should be careful. One should see it as maybe an opportunity for him, for us, you know, all of us, to think, like Lizette said earlier, to think about the moral eclipse we all live in today, to think about how we can actually remove the moon from the sun and actually see the goodness and that it will shine as bright as we can. And Bezrat Hashem, sing this Tehillim and acknowledge that everything in the world, the moon, the sun, the eclipse, the stars, the trees, nature, is all created by God for us. And we need to return and thank God on everything that we have around us.
So can we say Shakol Niya Bidvaro?
No, because you only say it on something you eat or drink. You don't say it on things that you don't eat or drink.
Well, he said ye eat all.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But the bracha of Shehakol is only a bracha on food or beverages. We don't say it on things that that happen outside of it, only things that we consume. the bracha of Shacho. But interesting, right? Because God said there will be light and there is light. God said there will be darkness, there is darkness. Definitely, definitely interesting. I want to wish all of you.
Sometimes when I don't know what to say, I say Shacho Niya Bidvaro.
Yeah, interesting.
Rabbi, is there a significance that the moon is female and it's happening now?
Yeah. There is significant. Not talking about this now, but just throwing to the mind the idea of the moon as being the cycle of the month, the cycle of the women, and so on. There's a lot to be said about that, the moon being feminine. But maybe that's for a different class. I'll be here for more questions. Just want to say thank you for everyone for coming, and I want to wish you a wonderful experience tomorrow wherever you will be. Just if you go to Niagara Falls, make sure to be safe. With a million people there. And definitely, if you're going to watch the eclipse, wear the special protective glasses, because without that, it's going to be very dangerous. Thank you for coming this morning. I want to wish you a wonderful weekend. And that's it. Thank you very much for coming.
Tomorrow, Rabbi.
And I'm here for questions or comments.
Is there no class, Rabbi, tomorrow?